You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We have all the Winnipeg Jets news for you, starting with last night's Jets-Lightning game. We're also going to, of course, preview tomorrow evening's Jets-Minnesota Wild game. Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild analyst, will join us in about 30 minutes' time. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and the birthday boy himself, Richard Pollock. Richie, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you, Drew. Thank
Are we going to sing happy birthday to Richie right now?
I think we should, but
right,
we won't.
Let's do it.
No, we should, but we won't. Nobody wants to hear that.
I think we should. I think we should get some background music. And you have a pretty good voice, too.
I do not, in fact, have a pretty good voice.
Let's kick it off right here. Let's do it, Drew. Are you ready?
You want to hit the first chord?
Sean, we got Sean ready here. What are you talking about? It's Richie's birthday. We got to sing him happy birthday.
And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four.
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, you're the only one singing.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Richie.
Thank
we,
you,
before we get to the Jets game, obviously, got to get that out of the way.
What Jets game?
Let's start with last night's Jets-Lightning game. We'll go with a goal-by-goal recap, of course, looking at last night's Tampa Bay Lightning victory in the overtime period by a 4-3 margin. Before we go goal-by-goal, sort of some overarching themes that you thought about last night's game. You know, from my perspective, and I was at home on the couch watching that game, that was a pretty entertaining, a pretty fast-paced hockey game between those two teams.
And by the way, that's where we like you
yeah,
to
you
be.
Yeah, you prefer me to be
during Jets
arm's
game.
Length away. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Drew, is arguably the most exciting game of the season for the Jets, either home or away. Certainly home. The game against the Blues on Sunday was an exciting game, but you guys know how high I am on the Tampa Bay Lightning. I picked them to be the President's Trophy champion and to win the Stanley Cup. The skill was so abundant in that game yesterday, Drew, and you saw Nikolaj Ehlers come super close to winning that game for the Jets, and I thought he was one of the best players. I think it's pretty clear that that line of Ehlers, Scheifele, and Perreault was the best line for the Jets, but you know, if you want an overarching theme, it was how wide open that game was, Rich, and how many odd man chances there were. And I thought that at certain times the Jets maybe fell a little victim to the pace of the game, because as we saw numerous times in the game, especially early on, the Jets turned the puck over. But then you also saw Ben Bishop turn the puck over when the Lightning had the power play, which allowed the Jets to come back into the game. So it was a real exciting game. And I think if you paid to watch that game last night, you got your money's worth.
Yeah, Drew, I thought the pace was, I think the pace of last night's game was terrific. Back and forth, high skill. The Jets couldn't have played that game last year. They weren't skilled enough to keep up the pace with Tampa. And yesterday, I thought they were able to. Got a little bit out of hand, I thought, in the second period. They needed to tighten it up a bit, and I thought they did in the third, which probably was their best period. But overall, I just think that the teams changed enough that was a good sign. That was progress, I thought, last night.
Let's start off with our goal-by-goal recap. The Tampa Bay Lightning opened the scoring at the 12:17 mark. Braden Coburn with his first of the year assist to Tyler Johnson.
On the boards there against Lowry. Back for Kucherov at the point. Let a shot go that one wide right along the ice. Picked up on the far side by Stafford. Lost the puck though to Johnson. Out in front, a shot. They score. Or did he get a piece of it? It was in and out real quick. Tampa Bay is celebrating. Braden Coburn, I think, has opened up the scoring, Brian.
Yeah, I think it went far down right in, and I think it's the back of the net.
Both Munsey and Paul were correct. The Tampa Bay Lightning did open the scoring. A real quick release by Braden Coburn, his first as a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning since being acquired late last season, I believe right around the trade deadline from the Philadelphia Flyers. What did you guys see on this goal?
Well, I mean, Braden Coburn drew pinches down the boards, and that is Drew Stafford's guy on this goal. And Tyler Johnson curls off the boards. He was really good last night, quick, and he beats Bufflin off the boards. I think here, though, it's a coverage question. I mean, if Drew Stafford's are you wanting to play follow the man around the ice? Is that what you're wanting to do coverage-wise? Because if you are, Drew Stafford's got to take Coburn, follow him, and he ends up covering a zone where no one's really there. And then Coburn slips into the slot as a defenseman, and if they're switching, and that's Enstrom's guy, then Enstrom didn't close the gap quick enough. So I wonder if the staff's going to be looking more at probably Stafford than Enstrom on this play. But it was a quick release by Coburn, and I thought it played a pretty solid game, although there was a mistake he made later on.
Yeah, and Buff was up high earlier in the play, and Stafford coughs up the puck trying to get it to Buff. And then, as Richie mentioned, Braden Coburn, a guy who is really known as more of a defensive defenseman, especially later on in his career here.
Yep.
He used to get more points earlier in his career, but he's kind of developed into more of a stay-at-home guy because he's slowed down a little bit. He's obviously a big, big D-man back there. But yeah, as Richie mentioned, little issues on the coverage there. And Coburn, a guy who, even though, he has a little bit of a scoring touch, they should have got to him a little bit earlier. And because Stafford coughs up the puck there to Bufflin, there's kind of a miscommunication. But it was a really nice shot. When we were watching the game, a lot of people didn't think that puck went in because it was right in and out. But again, I thought actually right before Tampa Bay got on the board, I thought that the Jets had a lot of good pressure. The Scheifele-Ehlers-Perreault line had a few good chances. So at that point in the game, it was really even. It was just one of those plays where the Jets were caught sleeping a little bit in their own zone.
You mentioned Scheifele, Ehlers, and Perreault. Ehlers is able to tie the game at the 16:28 mark of the first period, assist to Scheifele and Perreault.
And the Jets will start back, and Perreault takes a nice pass and will skate towards center ice and toward the middle for Scheifele. On the near side, Ehlers moving in, shoots, scores! Nikolaj Ehlers, the trigger man, on a beautiful three-way passing play, and the Jets have tied it at one.
On a night when Nikolaj Ehlers could have easily had two or three goals, he gets his first on home ice at the 16:28 mark, assist to Scheifele and Perreault. Just talk about the goal and talk about the performance of that line last night, because they were all over the place for the Winnipeg Jets, really applying a ton of pressure onto the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, and I thought that goal, Richie, was really started with Mark Scheifele's burst of speed in the Jet zone. And with that goal there, you mentioned that Ehlers could have had two or three goals, Drew. To me, that goal was also kind of Tampa Bay. You had Schuster back there for Tampa Bay, and it became an odd man rush because you had Braden Coburn was a little bit slow to get back, and he comes over and he tries to break up the play with Matthew Perreault there, and Nikolaj Ehlers just picks his spot, really, and finds a little bit of open space and goes in and doesn't get all of it, but it was a pretty nice shot. So, yeah, again, it was one of those games. It was just so back and forth all game, and that's what we talked about on the NHL this week. That's the type of game that Tampa Bay plays. And for the Jets, I mean, they're more than willing to play that type of game. They have those skilled players, and Ehlers, Scheifele, and Perreault, those guys can make plays, especially when you give them space. So it was a really nice goal, and Ehlers had another fantastic game.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I thought he was the best player for the Jets last night. I think he drives that line. I think Mark Scheifele and him have great chemistry. I think he drives it more than Mark Scheifele does. That's how skilled I think Ehlers is. In terms of this play, I totally agree with Ezzy. It's Scheifele getting speed in his own zone. He does that because he plays defense and picks the puck off the Tampa Bay player. And he's able to create speed through the neutral zone. And one thing I like about this is they maintain that speed. So the pass is to Perreault. Perreault skates. This line can obviously make plays, and Scheifele drives the middle and gets the puck. Sometimes when you drive the middle, you're creating a lane by a guy having to go to you or having to go to the high guy. And in this case, Coburn, as you mentioned, comes over and tries to pinch to take the puck away from Scheifele. He is aware of that and gives it over to Ehlers, and I think it's a big advantage for Ehlers to be on his off wing there. And he goes back and forth, and a similar move to what you see Andrew Ladd do in the shootout a lot, and it's 1-1. So, I mean, this is a quick strike, good passing. I thought this was a great play for that line, especially the two young guys, because of where it starts in their own zone. And they weren't great last night defensively, and that will come with time. But offensively, I thought they were tremendous.
After 20 minutes, the score was tied at 1-1. The Tampa Bay Lightning regained their one-goal lead at the 7:22 mark of the second period. Cedric Paquette with his first of the year, assist to Eric Condra and Victor Hedman.
On three, that was broken up, and the Jets will settle it down. And Sherrod, lead pass for Scheifele, couldn't get it outside the zone. Here's a chance on the far side, Paquette moving in, shoots and scores! Cedric Paquette with a wrist shot will pick up a goal, and it's 2-1, Tampa Bay.
What? Cedric Paquette made himself known with the scrum at the end of the first period with Brian Little, and then he unleashes a very impressive wrist shot, top glove side on Andre Pavlik to give the Lightning a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, and I forget who it was. It might have been Scheifele that takes the outlet.
It was Scheifele, yeah.
Scheifele, you know, it's hard to remember sometimes. Scheifele gets an outlet pass, and Victor Hedman pinches in and knocks Scheifele off the puck with a really good body check, and that really is what causes the goal. You know, Drew, I know we've talked about this before, but Hedman is a guy that the more and more I watch him, and we had Brian Engblom on NHL this week, he is starting to really look like a guy that could be a Norris Trophy candidate. He's that good on both sides of the puck. Plays like that, that defenseman like him make, are really impressive because they cause a goal out of nothing, really. And, you know, this goal, Cedric Paquette gets a really nice pass, and it's a perfect shot. Andre Pavlik has no chance on the shot because Andre Pavlik comes out to challenge Paquette, and he roofs it top corner. So it was a really nice goal, and we saw this again tonight, or pardon me, last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, you can't give them turnovers like that in your own zone because they're going to bury it, and it's not just one or two players. They have four really good scoring lines. So it was a really nice goal by Paquette. I thought he had a really good game.
Victor Hedman, you mentioned, as he had three assists last night for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, I thought he was really good, plays really confidently. Made a terrible pinch at the end of the game on the Oilers breakaway, which we'll talk about later. But he's a top defenseman. As he makes a great point, now on this play, he's able to seal. Scheifele knocks him down and at the blue line. Keeps the puck in the zone, and I thought this was an NHL goal, I'd call it. The transition on Tampa was so quick. You don't see that in any other league in the world.
And we got to give a lot of credit to Kondra for the pass that he makes.
Well, Kondra makes a great pass. He draws. Yeah. He draws. Sherratt makes a great pass. Here, Perreault's a little lazy defensively. He doesn't move his feet. Moves his feet. Maybe he gets in Paquette's way. But Paquette comes in his off wing, identifies the turnover, comes in his off wing, and puts a great shot past Pavlik. So credit to Tampa here for a really good execution of the forecheck.
The Jets respond 3 minutes later, 3.5 minutes later. Drew Stafford gets his third of the year, assist to Adam Lowry and Alexander Burmistrov.
And Bufflin will cart that out of harm's way, get it up along the wing here, and Burmistrov will flip it up along the boards and out towards center ice. Picked up by the Jets. Stafford, long lead pass, takes it, shoots, scores! Lowry put it in toward the middle, and off to the races was Drew Stafford. From the blue line in, tried to make a move, fanned on the shot, but he beat Ben Bishop between the legs, and we are tied at two.
A bit of an excuse-me goal in that he obviously didn't deliver the puck as he had hoped, but it was effective nonetheless. He goes five-hole on Ben Bishop, getting him moving side to side, and the Jets tie it up at two goals apiece.
Well, this is the thing we talked about, Coburn's mistake. You know, earlier, maybe he didn't make a mistake when he's trying to cover over for Scheifele and he doesn't have any help offensively. On this play, Strawman is on Lowry, so I don't know why Coburn is coming over to help. When he comes over to help, he leaves Stafford open. Stafford comes in. He's kind of leaning in on Coburn, and he's able to get the puck past Bishop, even though in reality, he didn't even take a shot. Goal scorers have that happen to them. They go to the net enough. What I like about this play, though, at the end of the day, is Stafford goes to the net. Earlier in that period, he had a 2-on-1 with Tyler Myers, and he ripped a shot from basically the high circle right into Bishop's stomach. That wasn't a great confident play. I mean, you have Myers on his off wing. You can shoot the puck, come in a little deeper, make a move. You have Bishop's a big goalie. Here, I liked it. Goes to the net and creates a chance and gets a goal.
And you got to give a lot of credit, Drew, to Adam Lowry here, because Adam Lowry is not the quickest guy on the team. And he hustles, and Anton Strawman is an underrated skater too, and he hustles, and he basically just out-muscles Strawman and gets the puck to Stafford. As Richie mentioned, Coburn, for some reason, he came over there, and that allowed Drew Stafford. What I meant to say last goal, by the way, that Ehlers scored, it was Ehlers Stafford that didn't get all on the shot. Ehlers got everything on the shot. It was Stafford that didn't get everything on it, but because of the way how Ben Bishop was moving, even though he kind of fanned on the shot a little bit, the momentum kind of carried it in. But it was a really nice goal, and it was a good response. And again, I thought that this game was back-to-back, end-to-end, and You know, it's unfortunate what happened with the next goal, but this one was a really nice one. I thought that aside from Ehlers, Seifele, Perreault, there wasn't really one line that stood out. I didn't think any of the lines particularly played bad, but I thought, you know, this was probably the best chance for this line, and it obviously resulted in a goal, but I thought it was a really nice play by Lowry.
Before the goal can even be announced at MTS Center, the Tampa Bay Lightning regained their 3-2 lead, or regained their one-goal lead, making it 3-2. It was 21 seconds later, Vladislav Namestnikov was with his third of the year, assists to Cedric Paquette and Victor Hedman.
Here comes Tampa Bay across the line. They let a shot go off the stick of Eric Condra. That went wide. Back toward the line. Hedman winds up, shoots, deflected in front. Stop, rebound, they score. Vladislav Namestnikov will get the goal on the putback. And just like that, Tampa Bay has regained their one-goal lead. It's 3-2 Lightning.
You have to be impressed with the response from Tampa Bay. Every time the Jets scored to tie the game up, the Lightning came back very quickly with a response to regain the lead. This one was Namestnikov with his third of the year.
Yeah, and where have we seen that before? We saw that in the first round of the playoffs versus the Anaheim Ducks, right? Really good teams seem to do that. And, yeah, you're right, Drew. I mean, this was very surprising. You could hear during the clip, you could hear that the goal was still being announced, the Drew Stafford goal. And, yeah, this is just a really hard point shot from Victor Hedman. The rebound just comes to Cedric Paquette. I mean, pardon me, Namestnikov. And Mark Stewart isn't quick enough to react. And it's a pretty simple goal. I mean, the defensive coverage just wasn't very good there.
See, I thought it was Ehlers Ezzie on this play because Ehlers is the first guy back, okay? And Scheifele is the usual center. Ehlers is the first guy back, and he comes back on the rush. He stays as lowest guy in the zone. And he basically stays with Namestnikov. What happens then is Scheifele moves over to Hedman to try and block the shot. Doesn't block the shot. That's fine. But Ehlers is still on Namestnikov the whole way as a low forward, as the third man. And the shot comes through. He stops defending. Namestnikov comes in and says, "What the heck's going on here? I'm completely open." Puts the puck right in. I know the puck was lost in that shuffle. Looks like it was a rebound off of Pav or hit a leg, whatever it may be. But you got to take your man. And that's what happens to young players. I mean, how dynamic was Ehlers last night offensively? So you're going to have some learning and growing pains defensively. You have to be prepared for that. And Paul Maurice has to understand that's part of the process, and I don't have to tell him that. I'm sure he knows.
After 40 minutes, the Lightning led by that 3-2 margin. They got an early third-period power play with Toby Enstrom in the penalty box for holding the stick. Blake Wheeler shorthanded with his fourth of the year.
Here's Hedman, winds the puck out of his own zone, gathers speed towards center ice, and got stymied there. The Jets line by Trouba, who took the puck off the stick and sends it all the way down the ice. Wheeler steals the puck. Wheeler in front. A backhand. He scores! Blake Wheeler stole it off the goaltender on a forecheck, and the Jets have their second shorty of the year, and we're tied at 3.
Ben Bishop not especially adept at puck handling. Blake Wheeler applying the pressure on him, and good things happen when you force a goaltender into handling the puck when he's not altogether comfortable doing so.
Well, you know what, though? I disagree with that a little bit. I think Ben Bishop can play the puck, Drew.
I agree. It's just that,
you know, in this situation, you've got Ben Bishop, who's a left-shot goaltender, and Blake Wheeler's a right-shot forward, and Ben Bishop kind of looks like he's about to backhand the puck. He goes behind the net and goes to backhand the puck. Wheeler's going the other way, and he kind of turns around. So Wheeler goes the right way after Bishop decides to kind of change course there. And I thought, you know, Blake Wheeler deserved more credit for this play. I think everyone was kind of focusing on Ben Bishop just kind of coughed up the puck, Drew. But you got to give Blake Wheeler credit for coming in there with speed and then picking the right side, because if he decides to kind of just do kind of like a flyby, which is kind of common, mm-hmm. but not something that you ever want to do when you're shorthanded, then it's kind of all for naught, right? Because then Blake Wheeler goes behind the net, and what does he accomplish? Now he's kind of stuck, mm-hmm. and he's kind of out of the play. So I think you got to give Wheeler credit here for really making a nice play here and getting them back into the game. And we know that he can score shorthanded. He had, I think, 4 shorthanded goals last year. So it was a really skilled play by Wheeler, I thought.
Yeah, you know, as he takes this, comes in on an angle with speed. Now, Ben Bishop, in reality, he pushes the puck back into the strong side corner. This goal never happens. He gets a little pretty with it, and he go. You know, it's kind of like soccer, and on the penalty shots, the goalie guesses and the way the player is going to go.
Yep, that's right.
And it's fine. In this case, Wheeler does guess. Exactly right. He guesses it's going to go onto the weak side, and he cheats on it, and and he picks the puck up. It's a huge goal for the Jets. You know, you get shorthanded. You don't have any nothing really being generated on that play. Saying all that, I think that over the long term, Bishop's ability to play the puck benefits Tampa Bay, especially their defensemen and their breakouts. I thought he did a great job yesterday as a whole, yep, aiding the team in the breakout, and he's going to help the defensemen like Marty Brodeur did in terms of physicality and getting knocked up against the boards. So you're going to have to take this. So, you know, you're going to have to deal with this. If, you know, similarly, talk about Ehlers, young players can have some defensive faults. A goaltender who's able to play the puck that well is going to make some mistakes.
Yeah, and Drew, to your point and to Richie's point, I mean, Ben Bishop is definitely not Ron Hextall or Martin Brodeur, right, two of the best puck-handling goalies of all time. But for a big guy, especially 6'7", 6'8", I mean, you don't see those big guys move quite like he does. So, you know, I think your point is well taken, that he really should have been a little bit more decisive there, Rich, because he had Stamkos there, and he thought he was just going to, you know, get it to Stamkos, but he decided at the last second to go the other way. Mm-hmm. So again, it was a poor decision on his part, but also a really good decision by Blake Wheeler.
The Jets got oh so close to winning the game in regulation as somehow Nikolaj Ehlers gets in on a breakaway with about 6 seconds to go. Can't totally get the puck to settle down. I don't know if that was affected the shot, but he goes, it hits the post. He beats Ben Bishop, but he hits the post and he can't seal the victory for the Jets, and they head into overtime.
Well, couldn't believe on this play. I mean, again, just I thought a great game by that line. Couldn't believe Victor Hedman was pinching at the blue line there. Couldn't believe it. Maybe didn't realize Ehlers' speed or whatever it may be, but great read by Ehlers to get into the middle there, and a great opportunity, you know, yeah, an inch this way, that way.
Then we headed into the 3-on-3 overtime, which was the first time we've seen it in regulation at MTS Center, and I mean, it's everything it's cracked up to be, entertaining, back and forth, breakaways each way, and Andre Palat ends up winning it for the Lightning at the 36-second mark of overtime.
And a lead pass, here's Little, a breakaway from center in. Little moving in, shoots, kicked away by Bishop. Rebound is swatted with a backhand toward the corner by Hedman. Good chance at both ends, kept in by the Jets here. Little gave the puck away for Ladd. Now on the far side, Stamkos, across the line, Hedman, Stamkos, in front for Bellotta, shot, they score. Tampa will win it on a three-way passing play.
Just tell Paul the whole game's going to be 3-on-3 next time.
We might do. Paul might not be able to make it at that point.
I don't know how the Paul especially is so passionate. I don't know how he'd be able to do the whole 5 minutes, because I mean that 36 seconds or whatever the heck it was insane.
Yeah, it was chaotic for 36 seconds. Never mind, you know, 4.5 extra minutes on top of that.
Drew, that might have been the most exciting 36 seconds that we've seen at the MTS Center ever. And there have been some really good games. And I'm not trying to be, you know, sensational here. I'm serious. I mean, look at the guys who were on the ice. Victor Hedman, Steven Stamkos, yeah, and Andre Palat. If you're Tyler Myers, who is an excellent defenseman, he knows what he's doing. 3-on-1. I mean, tic-tac-toe, Hedman to Stamkos to Palat. I mean, are you kidding me? What was unfortunate here is that Brian Little had a great chance to score. And then Brian Little unfortunately falls. And then who takes the puck? Just Steven Stamkos. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's what happens in overtime when you have two skilled teams like this. It was really fun to watch, and you know, if that's a sign of things to come, I don't think anybody's going to be happy to ever see a shootout again.
Yeah, better than the garbage shootout.
Well, it's amazing that any game ever goes to a shootout after five minutes of that chaos.
But the shootout's garbage, so it's better. I mean, I realize some purists don't like it, but again, it's way better than the shootout. I think it's exciting. You should see the skill of the players, so it's pretty awesome.
It is. I agree with you there. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll ask the question, was that the last time we ever see Steven Stamkos in a Tampa Bay Lightning uniform at MTS Center? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Before the break, I posed the question to you, gentlemen. Was this the last time we see Steven Stamkos in a Tampa Bay Lightning uniform at MTS Center? Trade rumors abound that the Calgary Flames may be interested in putting together a mega deal for the Tampa Bay Lightning player. Sam Bennett supposedly.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
Like that route.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, hold on, hold on. First of all, let's address the first part of your question, Drew, is valid.
Okay.
Steven Stamkos does not have a contract right now.
Well, for next year.
Well, exactly, after this year. And it's going to be difficult to sign him with the salary cap where it's at, because we know Steven Stamkos might end up getting one of the biggest contracts, well, per year at least. The average annual value will be high. As far as that rumor goes, Bennett and was Giordano in there?
I thought it was Weidman. There was a defenseman from Calgary.
That's not happening. That's just not happening. The Flames are not trading Sam Bennett, and that trade isn't happening. I mean, as far as if a trade will happen, I still think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to sign Steven Stamkos. There's no package of players that will get you Steven Stamkos back. You're talking about arguably the top goal scorer in the NHL. Look how good he was last night. He was in on the winning goal in overtime. I mean, this, come on, guys. I mean, if he doesn't sign and they can't come to terms, that's one thing. But, you know, these rumors that I don't know where that rumor came from, by the way. I don't know if it was from a reputable source. But Sam Bennett, I mean, this guy has played, what, 10 games in the NHL so far?
But you would trade Sam Bennett if you could. Now, would you trade Sam Bennett as if you can get Stamkos without the assurance that he'll sign an extension with you?
Well, the other option, Richie, that needs to be discussed.
If you know you're going to get him, you would do that deal, wouldn't
you? It's possible Steven Stamkos plays the rest of the season through the playoffs and they just let him go. That's an option.
That doesn't seem like the Tampa Bay way to do it. I mean, they didn't do it with St. Louis.
And the only reason I think you do that, Richie, is because I don't know if you get a package back.
Well, you don't. You don't.
We talked about this. I mean, this is, if he does get traded, I mean, you have to get a lot back. You have to get a player like Sam Bennett, a roster player, a young roster player. You have to get a draft pick, and you have to get a defenseman back. You might have to get more. You might have to get three or four players for Steven Stamkos. But I think that trade is a little bit ridiculous. I just think it's kind of coming out of left field. Like, what is that based on? Why would they be trading Sam Bennett? Oh, okay, to get Steven Stamkos. That's the obvious question, but, you know,
if you can trade Sam Bennett and sign Steven Stamkos, the Flames would make that trade.
For sure. I don't think, I mean, the incentive for Tampa Bay to give you a negotiating window is to get more back from you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real incentive for Steven Stamkos to agree to that. He's going to be a free agent unless he really wants to go to, say, Calgary. He'll just wait for free agency. I mean, the rumors have always been he wants to go to Toronto. We'll see if that's the case. They certainly build their team kind of around bringing him in as a possibility, a realistic possibility. I still don't think he's going to re-sign.
I don't think he is either.
Maybe in the minority, but I don't think he's
going to
re-sign.
If he was going to re-sign...
I don't know if you're in the minority. I think it's kind of split right now.
If he was going to re-sign with Tampa Bay, I think the deal would have already been done. I mean, everybody knows what the terms of that contract are. It's 8 years.
Yep.
You know that it's going to be $10 or $11 million. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, the deal's, you know, written for you based on the parameters of the collective bargaining agreement.
Fair.
And so if it's not done yet, that tells me he's going to the Leafs.
Well, I don't know if it goes to the Leafs for sure, but he goes somewhere. I mean, I think he's going to Toronto. Makes a lot of
sense. God help us.
I think he's going to Toronto. It seems like he wants to be the conquering hero.
If you're Calgary or another team, what do you want to trade for him? If he's just going to be a rental, you're not going to trade Sam Bennett or a guy like that. Now, I think it also says a lot about Calgary here. I mean, Calgary's got two main defensemen. You hear the name Dennis Weidman in that rumor. The reason that they'd want to trade Dennis Weidman is, well, a guy who can move the puck. He's got a big shot. I think he's slowed down a little bit from years ago, but certainly a guy who can play in your top four. And you look at it and you think to yourself, well, Calgary's got Giordano and Brody, and you know you have your two left side, your two left shooting guys who can play left and right. So there's your top pairing. Your second pairing will be Chris Russell, who they need to re-sign, and then Dougie Hamilton. So then you have Weidman's expendable, and therefore you trade him. If not, as part of a package, maybe to Columbus or somewhere needs a defenseman, and you shore up your forwards. What you need to shore up is your top six or your top nine. So I think it says as much about Calgary calling, says as much about Calgary trying to shake it up and trying to add offense as it does about Tampa still listening to offers on Stamkos, which they'd be foolish not to. I mean, frankly, you're foolish to not listen to offers on everybody.
Richie, you may very well be right about Stamkos being traded and not signing an extension with Tampa, but I just don't see, we didn't mention, apparently Johnny Gaudreau was part of that with Sam Bennett.
That
I'm just saying that trade, it seems like Calgary's giving up a lot. Not that you don't have to give up a lot, it just seemed like that trade rumor came out of left field. Well, like Ben Revere.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild TV analyst, talk about the Wild, the Jets' opponent tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 25 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program. He is the Minnesota Wild analyst on Fox Sports North, Mike Greenlay. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Yourself?
Doing very well. Thank you very much, Mike. Always appreciate you joining us on the program to talk about the Wild, the Jets and the Wild, the first meeting of the regular season tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening at MTS Center. You know, the last time these two teams faced each other during the exhibition season, there's a fair bit of bad blood at the end of that game, the Wild dominating the Jets. Do you think any of that resentment will carry over into the playoffs and really maybe spice up this rivalry even a little bit more?
Well, yeah, it's already pretty spicy, but I think I think a lot of that lineup, if I remember correctly, was a lot of I don't want to say American Hockey Leaguers, but a lot of guys trying to make the team and have a good end of the training camp, if I remember correctly. So I think this just the fact that the fans consider it such a heated rivalry helps. It really helps both teams feel like there's something on the line, and so usually it doesn't matter who's in the lineup. Typically, it's got a high feel to it, and I always love either going there or when Winnipeg comes down here and brings busloads of people. it's always fun.
Mike, Zach Parise's come flying out of the gate with 6 goals in 6 games, had another goal last game versus the Columbus Blue Jackets. Is Zach Parise a player to you that is kind of playing with a chip on his shoulder, a guy that knows he has to be one of those leaders to get this Minnesota Wild team further in the playoffs?
I think so. He's the kind of guy who, in his entire career, he's never missed the postseason except in 1 year when he only played 13 games because of a knee injury back in New Jersey. So you can see that, his impact to a team, it usually reverberates all the way through just because of the way he plays. He's the first guy on the ice in practice. He works on all kinds of different things. You watch him skate, it looks like he looks like someone just told him that it's going to be his last time on the ice ever. he has that kind of push to him, and it's been great watching him this year. He really has come out of the gate like he is trying to, I don't want to say prove something, but like he's trying to make things happen early here. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that in the last 2 years, the Wild have had really peaks and valleys have been really, really exaggerated in the last couple of years here for the Wild. And I think he's just trying to, as a leader, as you said, trying to get the consistency through his game, which would, hopefully press all the other players to have the same kind of consistency. So it's been a great start for him.
Mike, how big of a year is it for Mikael Granlund? We know he's got the talent. He gets an opportunity, obviously, playing with a guy like we mentioned, Zach Parise there. What is the Wild expecting this year from him?
Well, they'd like to see him, see him be more assertive, I guess would be the best word to use. And he has. Here's a guy who he's not very big, but he's already come out and played physical, which is certainly not the kind of game they want him to play all the time. But the fact that he's showing a willingness to do other things in his game shows that he wants to get better. So I think he's already starting to do some of the things they want to see him do, and that is be part of a very good line with Pominville and Parise, and they all think the same. They skate in a similar fashion. They seem to have that kind of chemistry. And the Wild haven't juggled any lines this year, except for one injury. Tyler Greivac was playing center in the first game, got hurt, and so since then Charlie Coyle's moved over on the third line to play center. But other than that, there have been no significant lineup changes or line changes within who's on the ice, and I think that consistency and that continuity that is developed there, and given the fact that they played last year together as well, this could mean that Granlund could take that next step that everyone talks about. So maybe looking to see him add some more points, be more assertive in the game and be a factor.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Greenlay. Mike is the Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North. Mike, obviously one of the best stories of last year was Devan Dubnyk coming over from Arizona midseason and really putting that Minnesota Wild team on his back in their drive to the playoffs, into the second round against the Blackhawks. Just a tremendous story. He gets rewarded this offseason with the contract extension. Is he the same Devan Dubnyk that you remember from the end of last year? Or do you notice that he's playing with a more confidence, that he's got the contract, that he's got that tremendous performance that he put forward last year?
Well, I wouldn't say that he's to his game yet that he was in the second half of last year. I mean, even when he was playing well, even when he came to the Wild in January, he had a pretty good start with Arizona and had worked on his game a lot and was playing well. And when he got with the Wild, he played so much every single game, I think 38 in a row, I believe. And, when you play that much, you're everything's refined. I mean, there's no thinking about what you're going to do. It just happens. And I don't think he's to that point yet this year, but that's fine. I mean, he's a guy that's starting to show that he can make adjustments in the game. Even last game, he said in the first period, he felt he was challenging a little too much and sticking a little too much and maybe not letting himself be a little bit more reactive. And so in the second and third, he said that he made that adjustment and it worked better for him, and he played pretty well the rest of the game. So he's a guy that's always going to be studying his own game. He's a guy that's always working on his game, and I think that the only thing between him and last year is just playing more. He just needs more reps. And it can't just be practice reps either. It's got to be knowing that he's going to play and knowing that he's going to play and that kind of thing I think it's going to press his game to a higher level. And then they have Darcy Kuemper, who will step in every once in a while. You'll likely see him tomorrow as Dubnyk played last game and he's playing today. So just, I think that he just needs to keep playing more, and I think his game will be just fine.
Mike, earlier you mentioned the forward lines haven't changed much. You mentioned Charlie Coyle is now playing third line center. When you look at the D pairings, everyone's used to kind of seeing Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin. It seems like they've been playing forever, even though it's only been, two or three years now, but they've broken those two up. What have you seen out of those new deep combos, and do you see those two staying separate, or do you think Mike Yeo is going to put Suter and Brodin back together at one point?
It can happen during games when they need it. You keep in mind that Brodin is a left-handed player, even though he was playing on the right side and he felt comfortable there. But, the Wild have plenty of right-handed defensemen. So they have enough that they have four right-handed defensemen. They have more than they have left-handed defensemen. So they really wanted to break down the D pairings in a lefty-righty scenario. And so they not only broke up Suter and Brodin, they also broke up Scandella and Spurgeon, and those guys have played together forever, going back to the American Hockey League. So, there's some adjustments naturally. Matt Dumba, who's an uber talented young kid, needs to find his game. I think early on here, he's trying to do a little too much, but once his game settles down and he can, be a little bit more consistent, you're going to see the pairings kind of settle down a little bit more, and it'll be. It'll be more comfortable, but there's an adjustment period. The Wild have only played six games, so everyone's trying to find what level of game they want to play and what they want to get better at and whatnot. So the D pairings right now they'll stick to what we started the year with them, and I'm sure that if their adjustments need to be made, the good thing is that these guys have all played with each other and even during the game at some point. So there's not really a huge adjustment for these guys in terms of who they're playing with. But, you know, some guys are now playing on the other side of the ice, and so there's some adjustment there.
Mike, do you think this Minnesota Wild defense is underrated a little bit? I mean, you look at Ryan Suter, everybody knows how good he is. He's on the ice half the time. But you look at, you mentioned Jonas Brodin, Marco Scandella, Jarrett Spurgeon, Matthew Dumba is really coming into his own. Do you think they're almost underrated and they should be really considered up there with Chicago as having a top three or top five defense in the league?
Without question. You know, this is a group that has been together and has kind of matured, and not only through the regular season, but these guys have now played playoff series together. So, I mean, that really gets you to a different maturity level. So there's a continuity there that really is something you just can't recreate artificially. It has to happen through the process of playing season after season together and playoff series together. And you can see there's a definite comfort level there. And the other part about, you know, the deep pairings, Ryan Suter, in the past few years, the Wild desperately needed him to play 29 minutes. They really needed him to be the guy who could play with anybody and play in every situation. And because of the fact that core is getting a little bit better, may see his minutes drop back because they don't want him playing 29 minutes if he doesn't have to. So there's a likelihood that over the course of the season, he'll probably drop his average down closer towards a 25 level minutes per game. And naturally, some of those minutes will get spread out through what is a fairly deep, young, talented decor. So I think, yeah, you're right. They are a little underrated. And I think once they start to feel better about the new pairings here and everything, it'll really start to show.
Mike, you know, we talked about, you know, you mentioned their defense really good, and the goaltending is certainly solid. And last year, the great surprise of Dubnyk. You look at the forwards, we talked about Mikael Granlund. Jason Zucker is a guy who, you know, has a shot, certainly, to be a goal scorer. Hasn't gotten the board yet this year. Playing with Mikko Koivu right now, who's a real good playmaker. What's the Wild looking for from him?
He is actually a guy that we all expected to just explode this year. Mm-hmm. And that line has been great. I mean, that Koivu, Niederreiter, and Brazucker line has been great. They've had some glorious opportunities, especially last game against Anaheim last week, the team they're playing tonight. So I don't think that there's any question that he's gonna step out and score lots of goals this year. And it's not even just because he might see some time on the second power play unit or anything. I think it's just his speed is tough to contain. Last year he had 21 goals in 50-some games, and, you know, and 19 of them were even strength. If this guy gets a full season and stays healthy and continues to work like he is with the other two guys on his line, they can be dominant. And so I think it's just a matter of time before he puts the puck in the net. It is interesting that he hasn't yet, because, mm-hmm. I mean, you go back and look at any game, it's like he's a human highlight reel that hasn't scored yet. He really has shown a lot of ability to get good chances. He just has not put it in yet, but I have no doubt that he will.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. The Wild continue to carry three goalies, Devan Dubnyk, Darcy Kuemper, who you say we're going to see tomorrow in Winnipeg, and Nicklas Backstrom, the veteran player who played for the Wild his entire career so far. You know, how much longer do you foresee that happening? I mean, I'm sure they're trying to trade Backstrom because, if I'm not mistaken, they cannot send him to the AHL. Is that correct?
They would only be able to send him down for 2 weeks conditioning, and that would need to have his okay, because he has a no move, no trade. He would have to agree. The only relief the Wild have would be a maximum of 2 weeks at some point if he agreed to go down and play and whatnot. But yeah, right now it's a static situation. There really is nothing they can do. There's no relief in terms of where they can send him or what they can do. So it's kind of one of those hands tied situations where it just kind of remains the way it is until there is something else that happens that would be a catalyst to him either playing here or moving somewhere else. And of course that would mean an injury of a goaltender here or somewhere else, and then a move of some sort. So until anything like that happens, it's just status quo.
Mike Greenlay is the Minnesota Wild color analyst on Fox Sports North. Mike, always appreciate your time this morning, and we'll see you in Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Mike. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. That, of course, that clip from the Jets Wild preseason game. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Minnesota Wild color analyst Mike Greenlay for joining us. This segment of the show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. A big Central Division matchup tomorrow evening between the Winnipeg Jets and the Minnesota Wild. Two teams, of course, very familiar with one another. You know, I'm looking forward to this game. I think that there is certainly a significant rivalry that now exists between these two teams. And both these teams look at one another and say, this is a team I'm going to have to be ahead of, likely, to be in a playoff spot at the end of the season. So I think this should be a very entertaining contest tomorrow night between the Jets and the Wild at MTS Center.
Yeah, and if you guys have looked at the Central Division standings, it's going to be like this all year. It's just so close. There's so many good teams in this division. I don't think it's even close as far as which is the best division in the NHL. And it's a good point, Drew. I think last year, four of the five games, if I'm not mistaken, were one-goal games between the Jets and the Wild. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same thing this year. This Minnesota Wild team is so deep, and they were kind of my dark horse pick to be a Stanley Cup finalist in the Western Conference. And I know that's, you know, a little bit of a stretch because they haven't been there yet. But you look up and down the lineup, and you know, we talked to Mike Greenlay about the defense guys, but this team can hurt you on all four lines. You know, they've got, you know, Ryan Carter, Eric Halla, Chris Porter on the fourth line. It's not the best fourth line, but certainly they have three good scoring lines there with Charlie Coyle and dropping Vanek down to that third line with Fontaine. And the Jets are going to have to play a smart game. And, you know, they get, I guess, a little bit of relief, Richie, because Darcy Kemper is going to play in for Devan Dubnyk. But Darcy Kemper is a good goaltender.
Yeah, back-to-back situation for the Wild. They play home to the Ducks tonight. Yep.
So even though, you know, you'd say Dubnyk is their number one goalie, and, you know, Kemper might be a little bit of a downgrade, he's still not going to let in seven goals. I mean, unless the Jets earn those seven goals. But the point being that this Wild team is not going to be easy to beat. Sure, you get them coming in second game of a back-to-back, and they're going to play against the Ducks, a team, as we know, that's going to punish you physically. But this Wild team, I think, Rich, last year, going through those struggles early on and then getting into the playoffs and then having success in the playoffs, not obviously going particularly far, but winning the first round, I think that, you know, this team wants more. And I think this is a team that, you know, has the ability to go further if they get the secondary scoring. That's always been the issue. They've had trouble once they've gotten into that second round. 3 years in a row, they've lost to the Chicago Blackhawks, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the hump is going to be the Chicago Blackhawks. But, you know, it's, again, the Jets are going to play here three good teams. I know the Kings are starting to come on now. But you've got the Wild guys, you've got the Kings, and you've got the Hawks. Those are three tough Western Conference opponents.
And they all play differently, Ezzy, right? And the Wild is not a physical or the fast team, very smart, very structured. The Kings aren't fast, but they're really physical, and the Hawks obviously can skate. So, I mean, you have a variety of styles, and I think that's going to be interesting to see. You know, last night I thought the Jets showed a higher level of skill than they have before, as we mentioned off the top of the show. However, I thought that they didn't dictate the pace necessarily, especially in the second period when it got a little bit out of hand in terms of Tampa Bay playing the way they want. So how did the Jets impose their will on the game and get and have ace? Now, we talked about this on Wednesday too, though, guys. Have they created an identity for themselves? And what are they trying to do to the other team? And I think they're still working on that. But it's interesting to see when they play three teams that play you differently, how do you react?
Sure.
You make them change to you, or the other way around?
Well, especially when, like you said, we're not 100% sure yet what the Jets' identity is, what the Jets, you know, what is the ideal structure of a game for Paul Maurice? And we don't know the answer to that question yet, because I don't think we've seen that ideal game yet, because I think it takes time, naturally. We're only 7 games into the season, so I don't think it'll happen until, you know, game... You know, it might take another 7 games until the Jets, you know, until Paul Maurice says to the team at the end of a game, you know, 3 weeks from now, that's how I want the game to look in an ideal situation.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I would say that the Rangers game on the road was maybe the Jets' best overall game, and that was, you know, because you're playing a team that's so good defensively, that was probably their most structured game, Drew. But even in that game, I mean, there were parts, the start wasn't very good. So I think you're right. I think this Jets team is finding itself a little bit, and there has been a lot of turnover. Like, let's be honest. I mean, a third of the forwards are new from last year, right?
Right.
Burmistrov is still finding himself. Patan, Ehlers, you've gotten smaller but more skilled, right, and younger. And you were already young, so I think it's a good point. I think, you know, this is going to be a huge test for the Jets. I think if you're able to win 2 of these 3 games, you're happy.
Well, and I think to your point there, Ezzy, about, you know, you've turned over a large amount of the roster. A lot of teams, when they turn over a large amount of the roster, struggle. And the Jets haven't struggled. They've turned over this roster. They're playing a new style. They're learning more about themselves and about how they want to play. Yet they're still 4-2-1 through 7 games, which is, I think, is a testament to both Paul Maurice and to the players' buy-in of Paul Maurice as their head coach.
Yeah, and you know, Paul Maurice, obviously, you know, for people are probably saying, well, they probably want to win all 3. They obviously want to win all 3, but the point being, it's going to be tough to win all 3 of these games. Not that they can't, just because all 3 of these teams are playing well right now. You look at the LA Kings, they've woken up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to play some good hockey. And the Wild are coming in, you know, doing pretty well. We'll see how they do against the Ducks, because the Ducks are struggling. I imagine the Ducks aren't going to roll over. Oh, yeah. They're off to a horrible start.
We'll talk about that later on in the show, and we'll also be joined later on in the show by John Rosen, LA Kings insider, to talk about the Kings ahead of their Tuesday visit here.
It's going to be a big test, and then you got Columbus and Montreal coming up on Halloween, and then the 1st of November on the road back-to-back. So you throw those 2 games in this next pack of 5 games is going to be difficult. This might be the toughest stretch of the year for the Jets. I mean, I know there's other parts of the season that have tough stretches with some games on the road and everything like that, but these are huge games, these Central Division games, and the good news for the Jets is that they're healthy, and last year they got over that hump, and they had an excellent record in their own division. That was one of the big reasons they got into the playoffs, because they were able to beat teams like the Hawks and the Wild and the Avalanche and Stars. So, you know, another great game coming up, and, you know, I'm sure they'll be up to the test, because we know that they were very close to winning last night. So
let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets' new D pairings with Ben Chiarot back in the lineup. We'll talk about how Paul Maurice has been deploying the Winnipeg Jets defenseman. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, alongside Richard Pollock, the birthday boy, and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and the latest Winnipeg Jets news is on illegalcurve.com. Wanted to spend some time talking about the Jets' new defensive pairings that have been deployed by Paul Maurice in the last couple of contests, including last night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Richie, you said, you know, off air, you said you're not a fan of these new D pairings.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've seen it before in terms of events from Buffalo, and certainly they create offense, and you know, yesterday was no exception. Buffalo.
But so before you get Enstrom and Buffalo playing together, Stewart and Trouba.
Yeah, so that's not new.
That's not new. And then Chiarot and Myers playing together.
Yeah, and before at the end of last game, they switched to Party and Myers. So
yeah,
they went back to the Enstrom Buffalo. Now, you know, you're getting offensively, they create chances. I mean, they're a little bit of a disaster in their own zone. And Bufflin has been creating a lot of chances. He's been roaming around a lot, which can be successful and can cause some stress probably on some of the coaching staff. I don't know if I love those pairings, though, Drew. I think they do leave you pretty vulnerable in the defensive zone, and I don't think the Jets are good enough defensively to compensate for that. I really don't. I mean, you know, the Scheifele line has been really good offensively, really dynamic, but defensively they're not great. You saw some mistakes yesterday. You know, your Lowry, you're going to rely on, obviously, that as a checking line, and then your top line and the fourth. I mean, are any of these guys absolute shutdown defensive lines? Not really. So then you have to be able to support. So how do you support the defensemen? And I think if you're going to have Buffalo and Enstrom, they're going to create opportunities, but they're also going to give it back. I think you need to have a little bit more support. And then the other pairing with Myers and Sherrod, I just don't know. I mean, Buffalo and Enstrom have their confidence. You know what they are. You know, they're going to be really good offensive defensemen. I don't know if Myers and Sherrod's a great pairing, because I don't think Tyler Myers is playing a very confident game right now. And Sherrod, now he's back from injury and such, he's had some turnovers. I don't know if that's the most confident pairing in the world. And I worry a little bit about how vulnerable they become. So I'm not sure these pairings, and I know they kept Stewart with Trouba, I'm not sure the pairings as they are right now, the three, I don't see this lasting too long. I think there's a little bit too many vulnerabilities there.
Yeah, Rich, I have some concerns too. And they're for some of the same reasons that you just outlined. And with Tobias Enstrom, I think, you know, he is always going to be on that top pair, I think, for the time being. I mean, he's their best option on the left side. I think we can agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when Tyler Myers came over from Buffalo, they were so good together. They almost had an instant chemistry, and they really feed off of each other. And, you know, the size difference, the skating ability, and even though neither of them are physical, and that's kind of what Richie's talking about. The Jets don't have, I guess the closest thing they have to a shutdown defenseman is Buff and Trouba. Right. But both of those guys are kind of offensive-oriented as well. But the point being that both of those guys are usually not on the top pair, right? And usually your top pair is going to be your shutdown pair, even though, you know, your second pair and third pair could do the same thing. But I think, Richie, the biggest problem that the Jets are having goes back to what we were talking about before the season started with Shane Knighty. The Jets are a lot stronger on the right side than they are on the left side. And kind of what we're waiting to see, if they don't keep Enstrom and Myers together, Drew, because they love – Paul Maurice loves to keep Stewart and Trouba together, and rightly so. I mean, those guys
are – But let me get in there. Is that – I mean, if you need a
– I think it's the most dependable pairing
but if
that
Mark
they have.
Stewart is on your most dependable pairing with respect to him, I don't think that's good enough.
See, but what happens, though, Richie, is if you move Stewart away from Trouba, you have two options, right? You put him with Enstrom or you put him with Sherrod, if that's what you're going to go – if you're not going to switch
Trouba
someone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you're going to switch, right? So the other option.
You play two guys on the when you're the right side, guys on the left.
Right.
Well, let me get done for very short periods of time when the Islanders game and such. So.
Right. Let me jump in there on that point. Are you surprised that they haven't tried to see if one of their right side guys can play more significant minutes on the left side?
Well, it would be Trouba, and that's who we're talking about here. But
wouldn't it have happened? He's been in the team for what's his third year now, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, because basically, Drew, the way I look at it, and probably one of the reasons why Paul Maurice is a little bit hesitant to break up Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba is for the simple fact that most likely leaves you with Ben Sherrod and Mark Stewart as your third pair if you're going to put Trouba and Buff together and then leave Myers and Enstrom together. That's the issue that I think Paul Maurice is having. And, you know, whether it's Adam Partey or whether it's Paul Postma, I mean, these guys at this point are seventh defensemen, so really this is your top six, right? You know, maybe Josh Morrissey gets into some games later on in the season, but right now, I mean, when you're healthy, this is your top six. And as we talked about last week, it's a good top six, but it's a little bit top heavy. If you take the top four defensemen and then you drop off, you get a drop off with Sherrod and Stewart, right? Ideally, you'd want those guys to be your third pair, but the problem is they're both left shot defensemen. So I agree with Rich. Against a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, Richie, I think you saw it the most because they have three really good scoring lines. I mean, Valtteri Filppula, Alex Killorn, and Cedric Paquette might be the best third line in the NHL. And so when you have that good of a third line, you need your third pairing to be equally as good. And I agree with Rich. I think Sherrod wasn't his best game, even though I'm a big fan of Ben Sherrod. I think he's been impressive in his first couple of years in the NHL. I think those pairings are – I think Maurice has some work to do still there.
And I just – again, I know they create offense, but just Byfuglien, the way he plays, and leaving Enstrom on an island at times. Enstrom's not the guy I want to be leaving on an island.
Like, if it's the power play, Richie.
That's different.
That's fine. Enstrom and Buff are great on the power play because Enstrom quarterbacks the power play, and then you get it back to Buff for the big shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as your five-on-five pairings go, I personally would leave Myers and Enstrom together, and I would leave Sherratt and Buff together, and I would leave Stewart and Trouba together, just like it was last year.
Well, yeah, which goes to what my next question was going to be, is why do you think...
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right. Why do you think they made this change? Why do you think that Paul Maurice decided to go back to Bufflin and Enstrom and... You know, and you know, mix things up a bit when did, was it necessary?
Like, why are Ladd, Little, and Wheeler together again? Right? Like, I think there's a reason. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, but, you know what you're getting, right? I mean, you know, yeah. He knows what he's getting from Buffon and Enstrom and that top line. He knows what he's getting. He's played them before. I just wonder aloud. I guess, you know, we haven't really seen it too much. Enstrom and Trouba, is that not a possibility?
Haven't seen it at all, really.
I don't think we've seen it too much. I'm trying to recall how much we've maybe here or there. But does that allow... I mean, I think that Jacob Trouba right now is playing even strength minutes, is playing about 3.5 less than Bufflin. He's playing 2 minutes less than Enstrom. At even strength, I think Trouba should be right up there. Now, you can take it... I mean, he's not as gifted offensively as Bufflin and as Myers. But I think you need to be loading him up at even strength. And I think...
Well, how much of that
possibly move him away from Stewart?
Well, how
so
much
who
of a
plays
function?
Who plays with Myers then? Is it Sherratt or is it?
I mean,
is it Stewart?
I don't know. We don't see them in practice. We don't have an idea. And I know they have the problem with the left and the right, which has been a problem for a while now.
Yep.
But you wonder if they don't go, if maybe they'd have some success and with Trouba and Enstrom as a combination, and Sherratt and Buffon, maybe Myers and Stewart. That's a whole new one.
I think the biggest problem that the Jets are running into in terms of this, especially Jacob Trouba, is that they're afraid.
Jacob Trouba was excellent last night, by the way.
They're afraid,
I thought he was one of their best.
They're afraid to leave Mark Stewart sort of without.
Well, they have
Jacob Trouba. I mean, Jacob Trouba is insulating Mark Stewart.
I don't know about that, though. Well, yeah, I know he's insulating, but I don't know about that in terms of they have Buffon, Myers, and Trouba. So they have three guys who are very talented who can elevate Stewart's game.
Right, but I mean, I think that they're saying, you know, the best of those defensemen offensively are Bufflin and Myers.
And Enstrom.
Well, forget about it. I mean, Enstrom's, you know, forget about it. I'm talking about the right side guys and how it plays to Mark Stewart. So if you need to play Bufflin or Myers with Mark Stewart, they have to sort of be more defensively responsible. So what are they losing on the defensive side and the offensive side?
Yeah, but also Stewart, aside from being aggressive at the blue lines, hitting-wise, is never jumps into the play. So a guy like Myers could jump into the play. And I think he's more dangerous off the rush than Trouba is.
Yeah. Well, but I'm saying that if Myers, but, you know, to protect him on the defensive side of the ice,
yeah,
to protect, you know, Mark Stewart defensively, is Tyler Myers going to be less hesitant to jump in on the offensive side if he knows that his partner needs his help on the defensive side? Whereas Jacob Trouba,
when he was playing with Enstrom, it was not like he was leaving Bobby Orr back there.
I know that, but I mean, you know, you can still.
Again, they're 4-2-1. I'm just saying, I don't know if the combinations as they see them right now are. I don't see them lasting necessarily. The other ideas tossing out. I just think there's some guys that can get in there a little bit more, but there's a skill that they can. There's options back there.
I agree with Rich in that respect. I don't think that you should expect the D pairings that we saw last night, Drew. I think there's a good chance that they might change. Again, we haven't seen them at practice yet, so you know, follow us on Twitter and we'll tweet that out. But I think there's a good chance that you might see Enstrom and Myers back together, or you just might see a different, you know, three pairs there. Because as Richie mentioned, I think they're still trying to find those right pairs, the shutdown pair and the right mix, and you know, having a stay-at-home guy with an offensive-minded guy, which you have with Stewart and Trouba, and you have to a certain degree. So.
But, I mean, how offensively minded is Trouba? We know that he can, or he seems to, when you know, on occasion, jump up into the rush. But, you know, I would say he's the third best offensive option on the right side after Bufflin and Myers.
Yeah, on this team.
On this team, you're right. And, I mean, he's only playing on this team. Put him on in another situation, he certainly probably has way better offensive numbers. And those numbers might come, you know, if the Jets, you know, end up losing Dustin Bufflin to free agency or trade him away or whatever else may be. Right now, I think they're saying, look, we have enough offense on the right side from Bufflin and from Myers. We want you, Jacob Trouba, to be the shutdown defenseman with Mark Stewart, who we know is only going to be really focused on the defensive side of the ice. I think that's just sort of the balance that they're trying to figure out right now. They're too top heavy on the right side. We've been saying that for months on end now.
By the way, is that a birthday donut there for Richie?
Drew, yeah.
Yeah, I got him a birthday donut.
Are you going to eat that, Richie?
Well, the problem with the donut, of course, is it has a bite out of it.
Yeah, I took a bite out of the birthday donut because I wanted to make sure it wasn't poison. And then, you know.
Now it is poisoned.
Yeah. Did you get him anything?
Well, not for breakfast. Well, I bought him a coffee and the Timbits for breakfast. Coffee,
yeah. Okay, well, there you go. So you
I'm
going to
get him something tonight. We're having there's a little party, so I mean.
Just... I wasn't invited.
Well, Drew, it's kind of awkward now.
Yeah, let's go to break.
Sean's invited, though.
Well, okay. Well, I'm not. That's okay. When we come back, we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets' fourth line, and we'll talk about maybe it's time to see Nick Patan get a little bit of more ice time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
I hear we're going for lunch with the Zappias coming up.
Yeah, we're trying to arrange something maybe next week or the week after. Yeah. Have a little a shtickle of lunch with the Zappias. It should be a good time.
Pumped up about that.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm not sure if Frank is going to bring the official Illegal Curve lamb that he made a couple weeks ago, but maybe he'll provide us some lamb for lunch. It's a heavy lunch, though.
Remember Mark Lamb?
I do. Mark Lamb scored against was it Mark Lamb who scored against in the playoffs against the Jets?
Who did he score on, Beauregard?
I thought it was Essence.
Wasn't he on the all-food team?
Yeah, he was on the all-food team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Mark Lamb who scored in overtime, right?
I believe
the backhand over the shoulder?
Yeah.
I don't remember, Drew.
Really? You don't remember?
That one I don't remember.
And Kari Taco was in the NHL.
You're getting old. See, the problem is you're getting old. You used to remember these sort of things.
Kari Taco was on the team too, Drew? I mean, is he?
No, he's in the NHL at the time, but he was on the all-food team, yeah. But, yeah, that series could have gone the other way with the Jets having that 3-1 lead, right? But. Yeah.
It's hard to remember.
Wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, it was not meant to
be. The all-food team could have gone the other way, too.
As it never been created, we would have all been okay with that. Let's talk about Alexander Bemestrov, and let's talk about Nick Patan. Nick Patan averaging 9 minutes and 24 seconds of ice time, primarily playing that fourth-line role for the Winnipeg Jets. Alexander Bemestrov, he's averaging more ice time, obviously, 16-24 playing on the third line, whatever you want to call it, with Adam Lowry and Drew Stafford.
I'll call it the third line, Drew.
Okay, we'll call it the third line. Is it time, do you think, that we should see a little bit more of Nick Patan? Maybe see what he's got a little bit to offer? What are your thoughts been on both of those players and how they've performed 7 games into the season?
Well, you look at the forward line, and you have to always take into account who the guy's playing with, right? I mean, Adam Lowry is your checking line center. Last night's game was a little too quick for him, I thought. He's more of a straight line guy, and there was too much speed. I just wonder if a guy like Nick Patan, and I mean, he made the team. It surprised me that he made the team. Keeping up with the pace and the skating is something I want to see more of, to see whether he's able to deal with it. Smart enough to play for sure. But you put him with Andrew Copp, and the line did have some chances yesterday, but you put him with Andrew Copp and Chris Thorburn, you can't ever say, hey, he's not creating any offense, because those guys aren't going to be creating much offense. So in terms of how you're utilizing, your top nine there, Drew Stafford has been able to, he can create, I think, for himself. He obviously has 5 points. He's been on the board 3 times in 7 games. I wonder if maybe a guy like that would benefit from having Patan swap with Bemestrov. But that, I mean, Bemestrov, you can use him in certain situations defensively and things like that. And this is not getting out. I mean, I think obviously much has been made about Bemestrov. I think probably too much has been made about Bemestrov.
In what sense?
I don't think it's as good as people talk about him as if, and when he came back and all that, as if he's some great thing. He's an NHL player for sure. He's a top 12 forward.
But he's not a top 10 draft pick.
Right. But I think he's difficult to play with at times and holds on to the puck too much. And I think swapping him and Patan, you'll see more from Patan. You'll see if he's able to keep up with the game. And I think he'll make the guys around him better. And a guy like Adam Lowry can help and compensate for defensively. And I know Bermistro is better defensively than Patan is, but I think offensively he'll give you a bit of a kick. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that happen in the fairly near future.
And Richie, it's been 7 games here, so yeah, it's still early on, but I think it's pretty clear that the ESP line has been the Jets' best line. And
that's Ehlers, Shifley, and Perreault.
Right, and then you got Ladd, Little, Wheeler, and even though that line hasn't maybe been as consistent as you like, with the exception of Blake Wheeler, who's got 9 points in 7 games, I still think Ladd, Little, Wheeler has been, you know, out of the 7 games, I'd say that they've probably had 5 of the 7 have been strong, and the other 2 weren't that bad, so it's been pretty good. But the point being, the top 6 has been really good, and not to say that the third line hasn't been good, because as Richie mentioned, Drew Stafford's been pretty good, and Adam Lowry had a big assist on Stafford's goal yesterday, and you guys know how big of a fan I am of Adam Lowry. But I think, you know, Richie mentions Bermistrov. He hasn't been creating enough offense, and I think he's got, what, 2 points in 7 games. He had that empty net goal on the road, but I think putting Patan up there would be a good idea, because even though he only played 9 minutes yesterday, you can see in close quarters he's a very skilled player. We all know that. I think maybe
you got to play skill with skill. Yeah. In my opinion.
And Patan I think can create offense better than Bermistrov. And if you put Bermistrov on the fourth line, that's fine. I think Kopp has been impressive. You know, playing 7 to 9 minutes a game. You know, the guy finishes his checks. He's got a little bit of offensive flair to his game. Him and Thorburn have showed chemistry at times. So, you know, Kopp and Thorburn are going to stay on that fourth line. And, you know, Bermistrov, isn't that much of a drop-off as far as, you know, what his skill set is. So I think it might be time for Patan to get more ice time, because you've already seen him, Drew, get some power play time with Paul Maurice. So,
especially in a game like last night, where it's just a very high-skilled game, it would be nice to see. I mean, not that Alex Bermistrov doesn't have skill.
He does. And I'm not saying this in this suggestion to pick on Alex Bermistrov. I just think that you could see a different mix there in an ability to create offense. And again, the Jets are going with this top 9 kind of, you know, they don't have Steven Stamkos. And I think Nikolaj Ehlers is going to be a top line forward in the NHL quickly. And I think he's, again, the most skilled guy in the squad, I think, up front. But you're going to go with the top 9 group here, because you don't have Stamkos and Johnson, all those guys. And with that, and most teams are doing this now. With that being the case, I think you'd like to get a little more offense from that line. And I think Patan makes his teammates better, from what I can tell. And again, this is just to see what is it like. And you could always go back to the combo as it is right now.
You're right, because I don't think Drew Stafford is suited sort of for a defensive checking responsibility sort of role. Alex Bermistrov is, and from the first time he was with the Winnipeg Jets, I've always been impressed with how defensively responsible he is.
Yeah, and I think also, Drew, in the fourth line, as you were the fourth line, I mean, Bermistrov kind of dangling around and wasting time in the offensive zone, that's a real good value to that line, because it kills shifts, it creates some sustained pressure. He may not create great opportunities, and sometimes he doesn't do that when he's in the corner and with the puck and hard on the puck. But when you're on the fourth line and you're killing time and killing momentum for the other team, that's a value. I think with the third line, it's harder, because guys like Drew Stafford and those guys, I mean, they want to be creating and playing off of each other, and I think it's harder to play off of than Patan, it appears.
So, Drew, tomorrow against the Wild, if we see Enstrom and Trouba together, and if we see Patan on the third line, we'll know that Paul Maurice listens to the show.
Something like that.
God, and they'll lose 5-0. Yeah. And then never listen again.
God help the Winnipeg Jets at that point in time. But you're right. You know, I think Bermistrov on the fourth line. Plus, you know, you get him out there against, you know, obviously lesser opponents than currently. And maybe some of that sort of that creativity that he uses is more effective against lesser opponents than against opposition third line opponents. And it might just help solidify that bottom 6 of the Winnipeg Jets. You get Nick Patan up there with more skilled players and see what he's got. I mean, you don't yet know really what he has when he has to step up his game offensively. You know, he's got the playmaking skills, but can he pull it off in 5-on-5 situations?
By the way, that ESP line is not my creation. That's our good friend Sean Jacob, who came up with that one. So I want to make sure that, you know, everybody knows who came up with that line. But I think it's a good line, because if you think about it, you know, can the opponent really see what's coming next, right? ESP?
No, I understood what you were saying. I'm not sure why you said it, though.
Well, I think, you know, that could be their slogan for the line.
Yeah. How about, I'm not done with line slogans. It's enough already.
All right.
You got your GST line one. Be done with it. That's enough.
Yeah.
You hit a home run, walk off, drop the mic, and leave.
You're saying it's time to retire, Drew.
I'm saying it's time to retire the lines. not everything needs a name. It doesn't need a name. It's just a damn good hockey line. How about that?
Yeah, now that the election's over, you know we got to stop with those lines. But I got to say, though, Drew, nice hair, though.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Frank Saravelli is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I might not come back on the other side. 10:30 in the morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Reminder, programming notes start.